Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Pieces from Prison podcast. I am your host, Ariel, and my sister cannot be here recording with me today. She's feeling a little bit under the weather, so it's hard for her to talk. So you just have me this morning. So today's episode, back in college, I took a correction class, and one of our assignments was to go to this website and read people who were on death row, reading their last statements. And I remember when I was doing this, I was getting hooked on these, and I just remembered this the other day. So that's what I'm going to talk about on this episode. So I picked one out, and I'm going to read about his crime, what I could find about it online, and I'm going to read their last statement. So the case that I'm going to be reading about today is a case of John Hummel. So John Hummel was executed June 30th in 2021. He was found guilty of killing his pregnant wife, his five-year-old daughter, and his father-in-law. Everything in this episode that I'm going to be reading to you is from Justia.com, and I will link that specific website in the show notes and on our website. But it says, Hummel lived on Little School Road in Kennedale with his pregnant wife, Joy, their five-year-old daughter, Jody, and his father-in-law, Clyde. He worked as an overnight security guard at Walls Hospital in Cleburne and would stop often at E to Z Mart convenience store in Joshua when he was going to and from work. He met a woman named Christy Freeze, and she worked at the E to Z Mart that he would go to. John would text and call this woman several times between the months of October and December 2009. This woman said in court that John did tell her that he was married, but he wasn't in love with his wife. She also said that she was divorcing her husband and dating someone else as well. They continued to send explicit text messages to each other and eventually had sexual intercourse on December 10th. A few days later, John Hummel told Christy that his wife is pregnant. She told him not to contact her anymore, but he did not listen. He continued to call and text her. She then tells him on December 16th that her divorce was final. Another woman named Lori Lewallen was a cook at a restaurant named Huddle House that was located near this E2Z Mart that Christy worked at. She testified that John would come into the restaurant regularly on his way to and from work the same month in December of 2009. She said he would usually wear his work uniform and sat in a booth facing her. He would talk to her while she cooked. But on the night of December 16th, he sat facing away from her and wore, quote, street clothes and, quote, reeked of cologne. Lori said that he was unusually quiet and seemed like he had a lot on his mind. As I just mentioned, December 16th is the same day that Christy said her divorce from her husband was final. So back to Christy Freeze. She said in court that she allowed John to visit her and her daughter at their apartment in Joshua on December 17th. He came late at night and was wearing his security uniform and stayed for about 30 minutes. Early in the morning on December 18th, emergency personnel responded to a fire at John's house. Someone noticed that the house was on fire after midnight and they called 911. A police officer arrived about 15 minutes later and kicked open the front door. He says he couldn't see anything but smoke and flames inside the house. He tried to see if anyone was inside by calling out and yelling, but no one answered him. He saw that the back door to the house was open. Once the fire was extinguished, the bodies of Joy, Jody, and Clyde were found in each of their bedrooms. Jody and Clyde were found in their beds, and the wife, Joy, was found on the floor with blood-soaked clothing nearby. An agent from the ATF said that Joy had injuries to her hands and upper body that were caused by something other than the fire. John went up to the first officer that arrived on scene at around 4:30 in the morning, and he asked what happened and if everyone made it out. The officer said he didn't know, and he went with John to his minivan that was parked across the street in a church parking lot. The officer and John talked while John smoked a cigarette. John told the officer that he lived in the house with his pregnant wife, his daughter, and his father-in-law. The officer noticed that John put his head down in his hands a few times during their conversation, but he didn't cry. He was just sitting there. A captain went over and asked John what he had been doing that evening, and John replied and said that he had gone to Walmart to check prices on Christmas presents. He kept asking if everyone had made it out, and the officers just kept saying that they didn't know. This captain asked John to follow him to the police department in his van, and he agreed, and they got to the police department around 5:15 to 5:30 a.m. The officer asked John to write a written statement on what happened. His written statement said, quote, "So I left my home around 9 p.m. and I drove down to Joshua to visit a friend, but he was not home. I drove around for a while to wait and see if he would come home, but he didn't. I stopped and got gas, drove around some more. Then I began to visit Walmart to price things for Christmas. I came home a little after 5 a.m. and found it burned down, and firemen and police were still there. John agreed to let the police search his house and van. One of the agents saw something that looked like blood on John's pants. The officer said that John agreed to give him the clothes he was wearing in exchange for new clothes. When John was changing, the officer saw blood on the bottom of his sock and scratch marks on his back. John left the police department and went to the office of his employer at 8 a.m. He went to a meeting, then picked up his paycheck before leaving at 11 a.m. People who worked with John said that they didn't even know that anything happened that day until people were calling the office and asking for him later on in the day. His coworkers and friends from church weren't able to reach him on his cell phone. A concerned friend of John's went to the police to file a missing person report on John. Police determined that the fire at his house couldn't have been an accident. His wife's autopsy determined that she was pregnant with a 14 to 15 week old fetus when she died. She had a total of 35 stab wounds. 10 were in her chest, 2 in her abdomen, 1 on her right thigh, 7 to the neck, and 15 to her back. The wounds on her hands were believed to be defensive wounds. It was concluded that the matter of death was a homicide, and she was dead before the fire. Her father and daughter's cause of deaths were blunt force injury. They were also found to be dead before the fire, and their manner of death was also homicide. John confessed to the murders. So John's new written statement read, "I left the house at 9 p.m. Thursday, December 17th, 2009, in my uniform. Stopped at a store to get some cigarettes off of Mansfield Highway. Went to Joshua to visit Christy. Sat in her living room to watch TV. I left her house and went and got gas. I then went home, killed my family, set the house on fire, drove around and looked around for a nice place to dump the weapons. Then I drove back to Burleson to go to that Walmart. Then just drove around and stopped at various other Walmarts to be seen on camera until it was time for me to go home. I knew I could not tell y'all I was working because y'all would check. I then went to the police station in Kennedale and lied to detectives about knowing what happened. On 12/18 of 09, after being released by detectives, I realized they had enough evidence to prove I did those horrible things. So I went to my work office to pick up my check and cash it. I then proceeded to drive to California late Saturday night. I arrived in Oceanside, California, and met a man. We drove down to Tijuana. Returning to U.S. Border Patrol, checked my ID and found out I had a warrant. I'm glad that I got caught so I could tell the truth about what happened. I remember standing there holding the kitchen knife, contemplating on whether or not to kill my wife for about 30 minutes. I stabbed her in the neck. She screamed. The knife broke. She began to try and fight back. I grabbed the baseball bat and hit her in the head repeatedly until she fell on the ground. Then I grabbed some of my other knives and swords and began stabbing her. I then killed my father-in-law and daughter by striking them in the head with a baseball bat. Then I set the fires. So that is his statement. It's an awful, awful story. I know, like, with this podcast, we normally talk about people from prison and the things that they have gone through before being incarcerated, and it's all terrible stories. No one deserves to go through anything like the people that we have previously talked about. But I think it is important, especially those cases that there was a victim that we have done stories on. It's very important to highlight the victims. No one deserves to have their life taken away, especially in this case. A child doesn't deserve to be killed by their own father. And I would tell the stories about the victims that we have covered before, but our cases are supposed to be anonymous for safety reasons. A lot of the people that we've talked to have emphasized how much they need their story to be anonymous, so I'm unable to do that. But yeah, I just wanted to take some time to highlight a victim, many victims in this case. So his last words were, "Yes, when they lay me down to sleep, for I am to die for injustice, the Lord my soul to take. I'll be with Jesus when I wake. I truly regret killing my family. I'm thankful for all the thoughts and prayers for my family over the last few days. I love each and every one of you." So that's it. If you want to look that case up on your own, again, I'm going to link the website that I used to get this story in the show notes, but his name is John Hummel again. He was executed June 30th of this year, 2021. And again, his wife's name was Joy, his daughter's name was Jody, and his father-in-law's name was Clyde. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed. As always, please give us a follow on our Instagram or TikTok at Pieces from Prison Pod. You can visit our website at pfppodcast.com. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts so you know when new episodes are getting released. Follow us on Spotify for the same reason. And rate us so we know how we're doing. Thank you so much for listening, and I will be back next week. Thank you. Bye.